All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Heavy Metal Sit Down. You guys, thank you as always for tuning in. As always, please like and subscribe here to this channel. We're always growing, always producing good content for you guys. But tonight, I am going to tell you guys something very special. We got the Hollow present in the house tonight on the Heavy Metal Sit Down. They are a newer progressive metalcore band by way of Texas and by way of KC. I am very impressed with these guys. I actually found out about them via Instagram. They just put out their song Sophia today. It is absolutely fantastic how damn good this is. Like I was telling them backstage, it's like Christmas came early for this fella here on the Heavy Metal Sit Down. So we're going to play this a little bit differently today, you guys. We are going to play the song that they put out today before the show comes out here. We're going to play that, and then Gabe and David are actually backstage right now listening to this, and then we're going to bring them in after the song to talk about this band. So actually, for those of you who are probably more on the scholarly side of this genre, these guys are actually former members of From the Shallow and The Burial. If you guys have heard of those bands before, you might be familiar with these two. But without further ado, I am going to step aside. I am going to let this play, and then we're going to come back and talk to the fellas about this great piece of work. Again, you guys, if Christmas didn't come early for you all after this song, hey, I don't know what to tell you. So let's go ahead and get right into this, and then we are going to play this up. Enjoy, you guys. Well, you guys, you know, if you're not impressed with that, I don't know what to tell you. To me, you guys, that is hotter than a hooker's doorknob in Payday. I mean, just fantastic stuff. Really impressive. Probably one of the most promising projects out right now. I cannot wait to hear more from these guys. This is going to be fantastic. But what we're going to do, my friends, we're going to bring in David and we're going to bring in Gabe, and we're going to talk about this promising project, you guys. So let's bring them on and let's bring on my guest tonight. I got David and I got Gabe on the Heavy Metal Sit Down tonight. And, you know, I'll be honest with you. These guys have been super cool chatting with them on Instagram. I can tell that they're very cool cats, and I'm very pumped to have them on the Heavy Metal Sit Down tonight. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me tonight.
Thanks, Colby. Yeah.
Thanks for having us, man.
Hey, absolutely. Hey, I like to add a little humor here and there where I can.
I get it. I did a podcast as well. Am I sounding too echoey here? Does it sound kind of echoey?
Hearing the echo.
No,
on my end. Sorry. Yeah, I've done a few podcasts, so I get it. Like, you have to find ways to keep the listener engaged. So I'm just, yes. Your doorknob comment. I can't say I've ever heard that before.
Well, you know what? You have now, brother. There is a first for everything. So, guys, how did this project come about? Let's start there.
Yeah, Gabe, I'll let you start with that if that's okay.
Yeah, for sure. So this is actually not me and David's first project or time working on music together. Me and David have known each other for like probably 20 years plus this point. And so we've kind of intersected, you know, at different times. And, you know, just to kind of keep it short, it never really worked out in the past, but we kind of always known that we would be a good fit working together. The last time that we tried was probably seven or eight years ago. You know, David was a new dad at the time. And so, it kind of just wasn't, again, the right time, but, this song is actually, from that time. So this song is actually quite a few years old.
Yeah.
You know, 7 years is a long time for, you know, me to develop my skills as an audio engineer. And so we kind of thought, you know, it would make a lot of sense. We were both really proud of the song, but, you know, we felt like we could do it, you know, better justice now. And so we kind of reapproached the song. It's mostly the same, but there's a few little things that are different. That I did on the production side and you know, with the drums and things like that. And David actually completely rewrote the lyrics. So tried to keep it kind of short there, but it's a little long-winded. But yeah, we've known each other for a long time, worked together in the past, but, you know, really excited to try again and, you know, excited to start off with this first effort here, so.
Oh, fantastic, bro. Gabe, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put you backstage and I'm going to put you back in. I think that your video is cutting out just a little bit, brother. So,
okay.
But 1 second. All right. Yeah, there you go. Perfect. Yeah. And, you know, I can tell that you guys are very seasoned in your approaches, because this song flows very, very well. And I will be honest with you, 2 minutes and 50 seconds seems like it's a short song, but I feel like for you guys, like the length of the song is absolutely perfect. Now, is that what you guys are just kind of aiming for with this project?
Yeah. So, you know, me and David actually discussed this, and I was thinking, you know, just because of the time, or the times, you know, people's shorter attention spans and things like that. I think it just makes a lot of sense to have shorter songs and really try to, you know, just make it as exciting and of course flow well, which I'm glad to hear you thought it did.
Yes.
That's super important to me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense right now is you know, shorter songs that are just, you know, all meat. And no potatoes, really, or all meat and potatoes, yeah. No filler. You know, I don't know. It's a balancing act always, you know. You try to write the best riffs you can, and sometimes you need some filler to make those parts more exciting and things like that. But, you know, I think me and David are really proud of this song, and it's, you know, it made a lot of sense to make sure that it came with us on this new effort to work together. So,
yeah, I think it's an intentionality, right? So if you think about what you're talking about, like attention, right? That's one of the biggest commodities for anyone, as gross as that may sound, right? Is like, you need people's attention, whether you're writing, playing music, relationships, whatever. And on the one hand, like, you don't want to just like, okay, how can we make our song like, we're not going for virality, right?
Right.
But we also have to meet people where they're at. So again, I think about writing, where there's this guy named Nicholas Carr. He wrote a book called The Shallows back in 2008, talking about how the internet's like rewired our brain, right? For sure. How people just, they scroll, they do bite-sized information. And him making that argument isn't saying we should stop writing books, right? He's not saying like, hey, stop doing these things, but you really have to change how you are crafting your craft to meet people where they're at. And as much as I would love to be like Between the Buried and Me and write these just, you know, 12-minute epics, like, A, that's not who we are, and B, it's probably not the right call in this climate, especially your first song, right? I mean, you've really just got to be like, all right, we're going out, we got to have a good first impression. And that's why personally, I pushed so hard to come back to this song, because I'm like, it was so good when we released it and it didn't go anywhere. I'm like, we can't afford to let this song just like stay in the shadows, you know, like it needs to have some life.
For sure. And you know, I think you guys played it right with the times. I think people's, you know, attention spans are very slow. They say they have less time than ever to, you know, listen to stuff. That's why, like, you know, YouTube Shorts was big for a while, and why, you know, TikTok is big. So I feel like you guys really played your hand correctly with this one, and I honestly think it's a good introduction to the project. And I honestly think that it'll capture actually a very decent audience. Now, this may sound like a very typical question, but I'm genuinely curious: what are you guys' influences? Because I can kind of guess, but I don't want to speak for you guys. So you know what? I will let you guys answer that. I can tell you like X-Tool, which one of the best Christian bands of all time, without hesitation.
Yeah, it's funny, right? Because just because you're influenced by a band doesn't mean that A, you want to write like them, or B, like vocally you want to sound like them, right?
Right.
So, you know, hands down, my favorite band of all time is Beloved. Like, Failure On is just like the perfect album to me. Thrice is my favorite band, right? But like, neither of those bands I would say like influenced me directly. But you know, vocally, I've always been like super influenced by Sean Ingram, which is funny because I saw him last night at the Norma Jean show. He's a vocalist for a band called Coalesce, which always just blew my mind, his vocals there. You know, you had like a Sean Jonas, right, from Old Zao, Symphony in Peril. But lately, at least with this track, like, we're at this point of like, man, I really wanted to find the right vocal tone for this project. And I stumbled across Serpentine Dominion. Are you familiar with that band?
I've heard of them, but I've not heard them. But,
yeah, so it's Adam D from Killswitch on guitar. It's Shannon Lucas on drums, so Black Dahlia Murder. But then it's Corpse Grinder from Cannibal Corpse on vocals.
Oh, sweet.
But like, it's not your old school Cannibal Corpse vocals. It's this really just like strong, pronounced metal vocal. And when I heard that, I was like, this is the route. Like, I want to hit this kind of like super powerful vocal, but not losing that clarity. I think of like, you know, Johnny Davey from Job for a Cowboy, similar thing. So at least for me recently, those have been some really big influences.
Adam D also plays in Times of Grace too, I think, doesn't he?
Yes. Yeah, much different than Killswitch, but I like it.
Yes, yep. Indeed. Now, you guys come from the Burial and from The Shallows. Kind of talk about like, you know, what are, you know, some of the differences that, you know, you guys have taken from those bands, you know, into this one. I mean, I know there's some pretty obvious differences, but I like both of those styles too. So I'm definitely curious about that.
Yeah. Sorry for my camera. I don't know what's going on here. It was working fine, like right before I joined. So I don't know what's going on, but,
you're in witness protection now.
Oh, shucks. There it is. He said it. Actually, bro, what you can probably do is if you just want to sign out and then you sign back in, that helps sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me try that real quick.
But go ahead.
Yeah, David, go ahead and lead off here.
Yeah. So, you know, and speaking to Gabe's influences too, I can speak for him. Musically, Between the Buried and Me, Glass Casket, Into the Moat, Necrophages, stuff like that. That's would have been his answer among other bands. But yeah, one of the biggest things I think for me, at least in the writing process, is when I was in the Burial, I wrote a good majority of the lyrics in the studio. So we, I think in Illinois or something, I don't even remember where we recorded, but I remember sitting down and writing a bunch of the lyrics at the time. It was my first time in the proper studio experience, right? So I was just like, all right, this is it. You know, and we did a few takes here and there. But this time around, like, I was really pushing for, no, like, I want this to be as good as possible. Like, you know, I could sit down and do a big take, but I was just kept asking Gabe, like, okay, is this good enough? Is this good enough? And eventually having to trust him on that, right? But for me, that was the difference, because I go back to that Burial album I was on, and like, I like the lyrics and I like the vocal patterns. I don't love how the vocals came out because it never really reflected my live presence, right? But again, it's my first time in the studio. Whereas this time around, I'm like, okay, we did one take of the song and we're like, okay, I think that's good enough. I'm like, no, it's not. Like, this isn't really like who I am as a vocalist. So then scrapped it, redid it, and that's the version that we have. I think I ended up doing like three or four full takes of the song before we landed on this.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But yeah, it's been a process, you know, just like trying to experiment with the mix. We've tried, you know, a bunch of different stuff, just to try to find the sound kind of right off the bat, get the mix right. And for me, that's important because that keeps me inspired when I'm writing. You know, over the past 10 years, I've done a lot more production than I have, you know, writing and playing in a band and things like that. And so for me, it's like super important to have the production sounding pretty solid as I'm writing. It just really helps keep me inspired. I believe the original question was, you know, what influences do we take from, you know, those previous bands? From the Shallows. So I actually wasn't a part of the band with their EP release. I joined like shortly after that was released. And so I wasn't actually a part of that. But so before From the Shallows, I was doing something more in the vein of what me and David are doing, the Hall of Present, kind of like a BT BAM-ish, you know, technical death metal kind of thing. That's always been my biggest influence and you know, interest. And so joining From the Shallows was, you know, I really wanted to tour. I wanted to play music as much as possible and get some touring experience. And so I actually ended up just like moving up to Ohio with these strangers and just like joining the band. And it was super cool. I did it for like a year and, you know, did some tours with them, made some good friends and stuff. But actually, while I was out there is where I really got the recording bug, because the band recorded with Joey Sturgis. And, you know, he's always kind of been known for having a really like lean setup and making the most out of a pretty modest setup. And so while I was in the band, they kind of tried to replicate Joey's setup. And, you know, it just was mind blowing for me to see how, you know, how low the barrier of entry was for recording. And so I took a lot of inspiration from that. And when I moved back to Kansas City after playing with From the Shallows, I just kind of continued to do projects, more technical metal stuff. But also, you know, hone the skills, the recording skills and things like that. And kind of eventually that ended up taking over for some time. And so, yeah, From the Shallows was more so about getting some touring experience,
for sure,
trying to get up there and level up. And, but my heart is kind of more so into like technical death metal, that kind of stuff. So.
Sweet. And you know, the production quality here is good. Absolutely. And you know, I've always said it, there's been countless bands I've heard that are great, but they have terrible producers. And I feel like that really, like, that could have been you guys.
Oh,
but
yeah,
the production was very good. It was very spot on. It that could have been you guys. I can tell you guys are talented, but like, if you guys would have had bad production or the wrong producer, it could have been all for nothing. So that was definitely something that stood out to me. It's like, wow, because it's not, I don't think it's overproduced, because I also can say too that some bands are way too studio production heavy. They get into a live setting and they just sound completely different. It's not the same experience, but I feel like it was a very well-balanced production. So my hope is, and of course I'm not going to tell you guys what to do, it's your band, but my hope as a fan is that you guys keep up that style, because it's sick as shit, bro. It really is.
Man, thanks so much. And yeah, you know, we have been those bands. We've been those bands that, you know, had some good stuff, but just, you know, the production quality wasn't there. And so it doesn't resonate with people, you know, emotionally, right, when you don't have the production value there. So, you know, I wasn't ever sure if I would do another project. I've always, like, deep down been like, man, I've still got more to give, you know, in terms there of songwriting and stuff like that. But I'm definitely glad that I've spent the last, you know, decade or so honing these audio skills, so that when the time came to write some new stuff, it would sound good. And I would, you know, there's nothing better than being able to bring your vision sonically to fruition with your songs. And so it's awesome to be able to do that. But yeah, I'm glad you appreciate as well that it's not overproduced. I mean, like, that's very much important to me. I don't want to write stuff I can't play. I don't want to write stuff that can't be done live.
Yeah.
And in fact, I don't even think the guitars are really edited in this track. Like, I really did try to make it, find that balance of you know, it being as organic as possible. So yeah, I'm glad it's still, like, even with that, we found a good balance where it feels, you know, organic and not overproduced, but it still sounds professional, because, you know, that can definitely be tough to do.
Yeah, unless you're like a black metal band where it's like, no, we want it to sound as garbage as possible. Yeah. But yeah, it's what's really funny though, and I wanted to say this earlier, but I feel like this is the better time. So we were getting ready to be like, okay, we think the song's done. And I was not confident with my vocals at all, only to find out that, like, because I'd been listening to them through AirPods, right? Come to find out, some stuff that Gabe had used for the mixing and mastering was, like, really just not working with that. And I bring that up just because, again, like, that's for us, like, we're not just gonna be like, okay, cool, you know what, it sounds good enough, right? It's like, no, like, we really can, we want to make sure we can sign off on this, right? It's the same thing. So I'm a software dev, and, you know, it's like, whenever I put stuff in for my lead engineer to review, like, I want to make sure, like, doesn't mean I'm not going to make any corrections or, like, whatever, but I really want to make sure, like, hey, this has got everything I can put behind it, right? And that's kind of, whether it's now or even 15 years ago, that's kind of been the trend with bands, is just like, well, we just want to get out there, right? We just want people to know who we are. We just want to put stuff out. And, like, I admire that for sure, but to a certain point, it's like, you do kind of hurt yourself. Right. So again, that's what we wanted to avoid here, is like, yes, it's going to take us a little bit longer. Like, I think this whole process took us longer than we thought it was going to, but we both feel really proud about what we put out.
Well, and you know, to piggyback on that though, I don't think it's a bad thing that you guys are taking your time. And I'll tell you why. I think there's almost too much music out there, but not enough good music. That is That is what I fully believe. I've heard people say that. So the fact that you guys are taking your time, I don't think that's a bad thing at all. And in fact, I think it might actually keep people waiting in a good way, saying, hey, you know, I can't wait for these guys to put out new stuff, because that first one was a damn good one. So I think
at your wall, though, like Slaughter of the Soul. Right. So we were actually commenting while we were in the back room about, you know, you had Cephalic Carnage and Suffocation. And like Slaughter of the Soul is still this album 30 years later where I'm like, it's near perfect. Right. And but in that 90s era.
Background's not done, by the way. There's going to be more coming. So strap on your seatbelt. There's going to be more coming.
But the 90s, early 2000s. I mean, you can say you're nostalgic, whatever. But like legitimately, there were so many good metal albums. So I will say, again, being a former podcaster, I did make sure to listen to one of your episodes. It was with Jonathan from Dead to Fall, right?
Oh, thank you.
So, like,
thank you for listening.
I know, like, Gabe and I both talked about this. Like, in the 90s, early 2000s, when record labels actually meant something, you know, like, they were signing good quality bands. And those albums, like, they weren't perfect, but, like, you had good quality, consistent releases. I would wager to say, out of my top 10 albums, if I actually made a list, all of them would be before 2010. Like, I guarantee they would be. And it's not that there's not good bands out now, but it's either A, they're all singles, right? Which, yes, I know we just released a single. That's not our, you know, our Talos, right? That's not our end goal, is just to do singles. But yeah, unfortunately, there's not those good quality, solid releases consistently that I feel like a lot of us grew to expect, right? You still get some from time to time.
Yep.
I'm not going to say you don't get that, but there is something, whether it's a combination of bands sounding like a computer just defecated music. That's kind of my idiom, because that's what it sounds like.
That computer needs a doctor, if that's the case.
Yeah, or it's just, you know, and someone brought this up today earlier, and I think they're right, is like you hear a band like Knocked Loose, Wage War, Lorna Shore, and everyone wants to do what they're doing, right? But then you have bands like Alluvial that, you know, I really just, I got into them years ago when it was Wes and Keith Marrow's, just an instrumental album, and it was great, but I lost track of them after that. But they have an album in 2021 called Sarcoma, and then they had an EP that they did earlier this year. And it's some of the best metal I've heard in a long time. But again, that's not the stuff that's blowing up, right? And it's just, it's the bands that are going, like, the bands are just chasing virality rather than, like, it legitimately used to be good quality music is what was popular. Like, and not always, but there was that time where that was the case, right? Where you could look at bands like, you know, I know, Gabe, you're a huge fan of them, but when you look at A Life Once Lost, like, no, they didn't like sold out tours, but like people knew who they were because they wrote good music. It's just, it's not, I don't feel like the pool is the same anymore.
Boy, there's so much that I could unpack there. I think that people really do chase the algorithm, and I think it's a very bad model. Yep. If you ask me, I think it forces people to not be themselves. You know, you're constantly chasing the algorithm, and I'll give you guys a prime example of that. On this show, I've had the privilege of talking to bands that I've followed for a very long time that have, you know, influenced me heavily. It's a great honor. Perfect. But I fully believe in platforming people too, who are up and coming, because those are the future of the scene, in my opinion. So I don't need to have just big bands on my show. And there's been people much bigger than myself that have came on my show when I had 50 subscribers. Okay. So I'm just returning the favor, and you're doing right by, you know, people that I feel have legitimately good music. So this whole thing of, you know, chasing the algorithm forces people to put out quantity instead of quality. And so, you know, you're right. You know, people are going to start copying Knocked Loose. People are going to start copying Lorna Shore. And nothing against those bands. I like those bands, but people have to have their own distinctive sound, I think. And it's quite a bit more authentic. But like I said, this whole chasing the algorithm culture, the reason why that bands were so original back in the time that you're talking about. And to me, those were the good old days. Cause like you actually had like, A Life Once Lost. They're very, like, you're right. They didn't play sellout tours or anything like that, but they were very distinctive. They were very good. They were very tight with their music. I was pissed that they broke up. I mean, I love A Life Once Lost. I mean, they're sick as shit. But yes, back then there was a lot more room for originality because nobody was chasing some mysterious, you know, algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it bumps me out big time. You know, it's like, it seems like every band nowadays is just chin, you know?
Yeah. And, yeah. Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I'm just so shocked to see that that's the current landscape, you know, because man, when I fell in love with metal, like in, I don't know, 2002, 2003, you know, when I was, you know, a kid, you know, and then started going to shows and man, there was just this, it was different, man. It was like you had all these bands that, you know, had their own sound and their own character, and they came from different places, and that made its way into their music. And now that, like, you know, like y'all are saying, is it's just, you know, it's just, it's chasing trends and you know, trying to, I guess, be safe and do what's trendy. But yeah, I mean, I can't do that. I'm the kind of guy that can't do that. You know, I can only do what I'm either going to do what I absolutely love or I'm not going to do it, you know? So, you know, yeah, we definitely have, we're fortunate enough to experience, you know, metal in the early mid 2000s and be a part of that. And, you know, and, you know, we just know it's different now. And
yeah,
but you know, that's not going to stop us from trying to do what we do and write music, you know, through our, you know, our individual lenses and our, and try to express ourselves, you know, through our music, which, you know, again, it just feels rare these days that people actually do that.
I already liked you guys just based on your music, but I can tell I get along with you guys, like, as people too, because you guys are speaking my language, man. That is really great. Boy, I've had a good day today. Scott from Zayo came on before you guys, and now I'm talking to you guys.
Nice.
That's so funny, because I'm sitting here thinking Zayo has bucked the trend, though. Like, they have just consistently stayed the course.
Yeah.
Like, I will admit, I hated The Fear Is What Keeps Us Here when it first came out. I think, Gabe, we've talked about this, and then I went back, and I'm like, okay, actually, I love this album now. It's super nasty, but... You know, like, they're this band that, you know, they what, 2021 is when they did Crimson Corridor.
Yeah, it's 22, I think, brother. 22.
Yeah, it's like the top running for one of their best albums. Easily. Right. And I'm like, who does this at the end? Like, I'm not saying the end of their career, but like, it's the tail of their career. Like, who does that? And Zayo does. And they're set. I watched the video at Furnace Fest. It's just ridiculous. They put out a live album that's better than almost every other metal band. And I'm like, yeah, they just proved that, you know what, if you're good at what you do, granted they have a lot of history, but like, people have stuck with them because of that. People have stuck with X-Tool, with Living Sacrifice. You know, if Soul Embrace was around, people would probably still be a fan of them, right? Like, there's these bands where people are actually drawn to the quality and arguably the integrity of their music. That, yeah, unfortunately, is lacking. And that's not to say, ooh, look at us, we have it, but that's what we're striving for, right? Is,
yeah,
you know, that's what we want. It doesn't mean that everyone will feel that way. I would like to believe it would come off that, but that is our intention, is to be like, no, we're writing music for the love of music. We want to take this seriously. We want to put a polish and a maturity on songwriting that we feel has been lacking. And it doesn't have to be, you know.
I also want to say real quick, if it wasn't for Zayo, I wouldn't be doing this.
No.
Like,
no.
I remember when I first heard If These Scars Could Speak on this, like, sampler CD, I was 12 years old. When I heard that, it was over, man. I was like, what is this? This speaks to me. Like,
yeah,
you know? And so, I mean, Zayo will always have such a special place for me.
I know.
I mean, what a unique band. Like, I mean, they were like at the forefront of metalcore They were a Christian band. You know, it's so crazy. It's like amazing. I love the band so much.
And you know, the authenticity and the integrity is the word.
Yeah.
100%. 100%.
Funeral of God is in my top 10. I'm not even going to say it's their best album, but first of all, it still sounds incredible. Like, I put that, like, yes, my CDs. I still have CDs, and I'll put it in my car, and I'm like,
me too.
This sounds incredible. But same thing back to At the Gates, right? That production quality, you just can't beat it. But that album just absolutely rocked me. I remember, what was it? ICQ, I think. I don't know. It was ICQ. It was some way where you would download the full albums, but it was on dial-up, so it was torture. But I remember not really understanding what I was getting myself into. So, you know, it's Breath of the Black Muse is the first song on that album. I'm just sitting there being like, I have no idea what this is. I'm terrified and I love it.
That's awesome. Well, and you know, the thing is, like you mentioned, Funeral of God. If you want to talk about the Ferret Record days, that is one of the classics on Ferret Records. One of their best, hands down. And I mean, I remember seeing Zao back in the day with Shadows Fall, Terror, and Cephalic Carnage. Talk about a mixed bill of metal. Just talk about a mixed bill of metal. And kids went apeshit for Zao. It was absolutely I didn't feel safe. I mean, kids just reacted incredibly powerfully to them. And not only that too, Scott tonight, talked about how they love the fans and they love interacting with the fans. They don't need to have, you know, VIP, you know, meet and greets and stuff. They just love people and they love, you know, interacting with the fans. And truthfully, Scott was probably one of the nicest guys that I've ever had on this show. And when I met them years ago, they were just the same. And that era of music that we're talking about, those guys knew how to do the grassroots thing. Those guys knew how to talk to their fans and they knew how to bring the personal aspect to them. There wasn't much divas back in those days. If that's, you know, the term that I'm looking for, there were so much down to earth people who just really liked their fans. And I think, like, with social media today, that's really missing. Like, that fan, like, you know, people can say all they want, well, we interact with fans on social media. Okay. But you know, truth be told, anybody can do that.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I think that really drew me to heavy music was that aspect of, like, these guys are, you know, living in a van, touring state to state, and you don't do that for any other reason than you love to do this. Like, there's a purity to that, you know, and I've always appreciated that. And I really think that's one of the reasons that, you know, really drew me into doing this. It's just, you know, I love real stuff, and that's real, man. You can't fake that.
You're right. You know? You're right, Gabe. No. You're right, bro. You're right. 100% right. And, you know, Sam from Frozen Soul, Samantha, she was just on my show. They're a newer death metal band, but they're probably one of the biggest death metal bands on Century Media Records right now. People love them, but they love them for not only the music, but the people they are. Because at shows, they interact with their fans so much. So not only do they do it on social media, but they do it at their shows. I think they're going to be big, you know, not only because of their music, but because so many people like them as people. And I'm just glad that we're talking about this era of music, because this conversation almost fell out organically, but it's like, shoot, like, you guys really know your shit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We've been doing this a while, you know?
We have.
And I think it's just as refreshing for us to have this conversation with
100%,
you know.
Oh, fantastic.
It's, yeah. And again, so this is where I feel like it's really easy to get into this, like, oh, we have this mentality, other people don't. Like, that's not it. It's really at least for us, I feel like, when you've been somewhere and you know what things are capable of, like, you want to go, it's not that you want to go back to that. So if I say the name Walter Brueggemann, does that ring a bell for anyone?
Nope.
No, not really. I'd have to
think back. So this is where
actually, refresh my memory.
So this is where my theology degree comes in, right? So he's an Old Testament theologian. Anyway, he has a book called The Prophetic Imagination. And he talks about how the idea of the prophetic is not fortune, you know, future telling, right? It's calling things
to be the way that they should be. And sure. When I think about music, it's not that I'm like, we are some prophetic voice, but you look at how music was and you look at how it could be, and you see that it's not that way now. And you want to encourage people to return to a better way. And it's not a matter of pride. It's not a matter of superiority. It's you know what people are missing out on, and you Absolutely. Want people to partake in that, right? Yep. Where, you know, so I was last night, you're talking about, you know, shows. So I was at the Norma Jean show last night, which was hilarious, by the way, because before they came out, everyone's just shouting Ludacris, Ludacris. It was great. But so I'm sitting there talking with Clay, their bass player. I've known him for a while. And I was asking him how tour is going. And he's like, you know, tour's it's going well for them. Right. But nowadays, like if you were to be a new band and touring, like your work's always been a cutout for you, but it's entirely different now.
Yeah.
And I don't think it has to be that way, but there's so much working against you in a way where, like before, again, like it was on your connections, right? You've always had to have connections, but now it's all about your metrics, right?
For sure.
How many followers do you have? How many plays do you have? All of these things, these numeric values that we try to assign to the human experience, which right there is futility. Yep. So I don't think there's necessarily a way back, right? You can't put Pandora back in the box.
Yeah.
But again, I think we've just both have felt this longing for how things were before. And no, you can't go back there, but like if we can try to draw people into something deeper and more meaningful with music, like I think we both would be happy with that. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And
love it.
Hopefully,
love it.
Hopefully this doesn't come off like arrogant or anything like that. I think that's the last
this made my day. Are you kidding me? Did this come off arrogant? This made my friggin' day. Are you kidding me? Yeah, there's nothing arrogant about this.
Okay, good. Cause that's not where we're coming from at all. It's like you were saying, you know, we've seen how things were back in the day, you know, in the early mid 2000s, and man, it was just so cool. It was just like a community of people that you only went to shows if you sincerely liked the music.
Yes.
And it just felt like a family, you know. It was just I loved it. And and it's just completely different now. It's just you know, so we don't say any of that coming from a place of like, you know, we're better or anything like that, but we're just, you know, we're trying to do things like how we remember and staying true to ourselves. That's always going to be number one for us. So I just wanted to make sure that, you know, I said that. I don't want people to think that like we think we're better than everybody else or anything. Not the case at all. We just,
if I thought you guys were arrogant by this time, 43 minutes, I'd have said, let's get the show wrapped up. If I'd have thought you guys were that bad. I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
And you know, something else that I think proved itself back then in the time that we're talking about. Interestingly enough, a lot of people thought metal was some satanic cult.
Yeah.
But what I had noticed is that there's more Christian bands during that period that came out that ended up making it big. And, you know, I think metal got a better image of itself back then, because, you know, I think metal got a lot of bad publicity back in the 80s and maybe, you know, early 90s and stuff like that. Some of it, I think, was sort of you know, unfair. Some of it, I think, was sort of, you know, fear mongering. Granted, some of it was true. I can't, you know, deny that. But like, you know, people, you know, burning down churches in, you know, Europe made news. And of course, you know, people then assume, well, that must be all metalheads. But it's like, no, I don't think most people I know who like metal would actually do that. And and you know what? I think that some bands have a shock value to them. I don't actually think they believe what they portray. I think they play sort of a character. I think metal had a good image, I think, back then. And I think it was much more authentic than the previous generations of metal.
Yeah. Yeah. And the interesting thing, so I kind of want to go on a tangent here briefly, because you're talking about Christian bands, right?
Yeah.
And we've had people ask, like, well, are you guys a Christian band? So then I ask, well, what does a Christian band mean to you? And they're like, well, I don't know. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to tell you yes or no, because I need to know what you're thinking first, right? But the thing is, like, you're talking about that, and these bands we've already been talking about, whether, you know, it was like A Train for Utopia, you had Zao, X-Tol, all this stuff, Living Sacrifice, like, it was very against the grain, countercultural. And I don't necessarily mean countercultural, like, politically. I mean, musically, it was very countercultural, right? Yeah, you had Stryper, but these were very aggressive, heavy bands that
for sure
had to prove themselves to get a audience, right? They didn't have the built-in, like, we hate God, we hate government, we hate all this stuff. Like, they were trying to promote a message of peace and reconciliation.
Yeah.
You know, fast forward to now, where it's definitely the popularity's fizzled out, but, like, when, and this no discredit, because I love the guys, I am friends with them, but when you had Four Today blow up, like, that was a big paradigm shift, right? Because then it's like, oh, it's popular to be a Christian band. You know, As Lay Dying helped with that too. So I just think it's interesting you're talking about the perspective of metal, because it got to that point because these bands did the hard work, and then it's kind of like everyone got to ride the coattails, and then we could go on and on about the bands that aren't Christian anymore or don't claim to be Christian, I would wager, which is, that's within their rights. But I think that just proves a point of, like, it's going to ebb and flow. And sure, that's where, for Gabe and I, we're not, like, dead set of being like, we have to go back to 2005, right? That's not the intent. It's just, again, there's got to be a better way to do music where we're not, like you said, chasing the algorithm, because if you chase the algorithm, you're always going to be behind, right? That's the whole thing. You're never going to reach up. You're never going to catch it.
That's a mic drop moment. That's a mic drop moment.
It's like, you know, as much as I love it, like the whole, like, Deftones meme where it would just be like someone would get hit in the head and then like, I love that meme, right? The girl that gets hit in the head with the porta potty door. It was amazing. But I'd already seen that meme 100 times. You know, it's still funny, but, like, I couldn't tell you who it was, right? But then you have a band like Holy Name that drops their album, and it's, like, totally different. And obviously he has the goodwill of Sleeping Giant built on, but, like, that is totally different. There's no memes to be had. It's just genuine, heartfelt, pissed off worship music. And like, there's a reason why even non-Christian bands like them, or, you know, non-Christians like them, right? They're like, there's just something different about it. So there's so much involved here, and we're just like, we just want to play music.
I mean that's really well said. I'm so glad that I had this conversation tonight. Wow, I haven't had this conversation with someone, or two people, no less, at the same time. And I'm just glad that you guys really appreciate that era of music. I'm trying to do more of that on this show. I may never be the biggest in this genre, but I'll tell you what, the stuff I'm passionate about, I'm going to platform.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Definitely appreciate it. And, you know, we come from the same spirit of, like, we're going to do what we do, you know, whether it's popular or not, we don't care. Like, music is about expressing yourself. It's about putting what's in you into a sonic canvas, or your lyrics, you know, and I think that's so lost these days, just not even just in metal, but across the board in music. You know, music's like a product now. It's not art. You know, and I,
good point.
I love music.
Good point.
I love music that's art, you know?
Yep.
And, that's always going to be the spirit I try to write with. And, you know, it's difficult because, you know, every band that's newer and looks at the landscape and they see what they see, a lot of bands doing the same stuff, you know. And it's funny, you could look back in their discography and they're a completely different band, but now they're Gent or something like that. And it's like, I mean, you know, I don't know. This whole thing has always been about art, and we've sort of lost the narrative, you know, the plot. And I don't know. That's the whole purpose of this for me, is like, we want to create some good art and put some positive vibes out there and hopefully it speaks to some people and you know, hopefully it influences some people to get back into it or actually play music for the first time. You know, I've had to do many audits, like, for myself, of like, why am I still doing this? You know, and I always come back to, like, the reason I got into this is because when I was 12 and 13 years old, probably the most influential for me was The Silent Circus by Between the Buried and Me. Like, when I heard that record,
that's beautiful album.
When I heard that record, I was like, this is what I want to do. The way I feel right now, that's what I'm chasing. You know, yep. I want somebody else to feel that way. So that's always been my purpose. And it's like, you know, I can look back to that moment and be like, okay, that's why I'm doing this, you know? But everybody has a different why, and hopefully it's an authentic one.
Said perfectly. Well, guys, we will talk to your backstage for a few moments after the show. But since you guys are my guests, I'm going to give you guys the final word on the broadcast. Where can people find your music?
This is where you joke about, like, pure volume, you know, all that. I mean,
very fitting for the conversation. Very fitting for the conversation.
Yeah, wherever DistroKid puts stuff out. So Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, stuff like that.
Instagram. I think that's where
Instagram. I mean, that's really the only social media we're using very begrudgingly. And that's the funny thing, is I was off social media for a few years for the most part outside of, like, LinkedIn. And then I decided I wanted to reach out to Gabe. And I made an Instagram account to follow my wife. And then I was like, I want to reach out to Gabe. It's been a minute. And then now I'm running our band account, and I kind of die on the inside, because I'm like, I know how to do it. I hate it.
Oh my God. You guys are hilarious. Oh my God.
But, yeah. So just your typical places.
Awesome, guys. Well, listen, Gabe and David, new friends of the Heavy Metal Sit Down, for damn sure. No question about it. Guys, thank you for watching the Heavy Metal Sit Down, as always, for my people out there. I greatly appreciate the support. We got more in store, as always, that I won't announce tonight, but we got more in store coming up. Some big ones, some great up-and-comers too, as always. Guys, we're going to talk backstage here. But as always, my friends, please subscribe to the Heavy Metal Sit Down. And as always, we will catch you on the next Heavy Metal Sit Down. Thank you, everybody, for watching.